What's up, my friends? It's Rick Mulready here. Listen, if you are feeling like you're struggling to keep up with all the AI opportunities, or maybe you're wondering how to even start leveraging AI in your business without all the headaches, the AIify newsletter is designed with you in mind, my friend. Every week, I simplify AI for you, showing you how to apply it and integrate it into your business so that you can work less and profit more. As one of my readers put it, it's a must-have for any entrepreneur who wants to get more done in less time. And they said there's a lot of noise out there and your information is up to date, yet just feels more calm and more relatable. So I want to invite you to sign up for the AIify newsletter. It's free. Just go to rickmulready.com/newsletter. That's rickmulready.com/newsletter.
And it wasn't until I got the cancer to realize, wait a second, because I don't know, it probably wouldn't have stopped it, but had I gotten checkups, had I gotten to a point where before it was visible to me, then we probably wouldn't have been in such a precarious position. It wouldn't have grown to the size it was, but I took my fingers off the pulse. And so I look at things and say, how many of us are taking the fingers off the pulse of our relationships, of our health or our wealth or one of those, you know, our spirituality, our emotional well-being, our leadership skills. And it sounds like a lot, but if you truly want to show up, we can't just be great in one aspect, because then we end up like I ended up. I feel like I've been given a gift that this didn't penetrate the wall. It didn't spread. And it's allowed me to sit back and say, let's make sure that isn't about balance, that we get harmony in our life, to do things in a way that there is harmony, that we do things that feed each other, and we do it consciously, and we do it with intent and intentionally, and we don't just go along for the ride.
Welcome to the Art of Online Business podcast. My name is Rick Mulready, and I'm an online business coach, Facebook and Instagram ads expert, lifestyle entrepreneur, and I'm a total coffee snob as well. Each week, you're going to learn actionable strategies, mindsets, and tips that take the guesswork out of growing and scaling a profitable online business so that you can truly become an entrepreneur with impact. This podcast is your secret weapon for fast-tracking the growth of your online business. Let's do this. This might be one of the most important podcast interviews I've ever done. You're listening to a conversation that I had with my very good friend, Mel Abraham. Now, I've known Mel for several years now. I met him in a mastermind that I was in a few years ago, got to know Mel, and now Mel is one of my very closest friends, and he is just a brilliant entrepreneur. He's an amazing person. He's a mentor to me on so many different levels in my life and my business. Mel is a CPA. He has multiple online businesses. He's a best-selling author. He is a coach. He's a consultant. He does corporate valuations. I mean, the dude just is involved in so many different things and just so smart. He does everything with the best and biggest heart possible. And I recently invited Mel to speak to my Accelerator Mastermind, the retreat that I had recently for my October group. We had a retreat here in San Diego, and Mel came and spoke on the second day. And I asked him to come speak about frameworks. Mel is, like I said, he's an expert in so many different things, but specifically frameworks, developing a framework and how you build your business and tell your story in your business. That is one of his expertises. And then he's also an expert in the entrepreneurial finances and building wealth and all that stuff. And I'm going to have him back on the podcast here very soon to talk about that aspect of growing in your online business and so forth. But so the story, and as you heard from that clip earlier, Mel is beating cancer right now. And this is not something that Mel has talked a whole lot about publicly. Actually, this is the very first time that he's talked about it publicly in this format. And he spoke at the Accelerator retreat was going to talk about frameworks, and he had all the slides up, and about 5 minutes before he was going to start, I was like, hey, dude, would you be willing to talk about everything that you've been going through and the lessons that you've learned along the way? Because he and I talk a lot, and we talk about business, we talk about, you know, just real life, personal stuff, all that stuff. And he's been just, like I said, a huge inspiration to me. And one of the things that just really has affected me is his rebalancing of priorities in his life due to the cancer diagnosis and everything that he's gone through since. And he completely stopped, you know, what he was doing in his businesses, and just sort of has recently, and you're going to hear the story here, but has recently started kind of with a clean slate, deciding what he wants to do, what makes him happy. And I'm on this, just this mission to have all of you be defining success in your business, in your life, for what success means to you. And that's going to mean something very different to somebody else. So often, and we talk about this later in the interview here today, we get caught up in comparing ourselves to what other people are doing and their Instagram feed and all this other stuff. And that can cause a lot of, I'm not enough, I'm not doing enough, oh man, that person's got it all figured out. When, you know what, in reality, that's not true at all. You know, and so I want to make sure that you, just like me, we are defining our own definition of success, because success is going to look different for everybody. And we dive into this today with my conversation with Mel. And so I asked him to come on the podcast. And well, actually, first, when I asked him a few minutes before he was supposed to talk about frameworks at the retreat, I sprung this on him. I was like, hey, would you be willing to talk about all this? And he was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it. And so Mel is a master storyteller, and he started to talk about all this, and I was watching the room. We had 17 people in the room, and I was watching all of them listen to him, and they were all literally on the edge of their seats. And so afterwards, after he finished up during lunchtime, I was like, hey, man, would you be willing to come on the podcast and talk about this? I think that so many people can benefit, so that you can all benefit from his story and his, how he's looking at his business and reprioritizing things in his business and his life for defining success on his terms. And frankly, to be completely honest, this was a selfish interview for me too. He and I have talked about all this stuff, but I also just cannot talk about this stuff enough, and especially with a guy like Mel Abraham. So I wanted to have him come on and share it with you. He said to me, you know what? Absolutely. I'll come on the podcast. I haven't talked about this at all, he said. And I think it'd be great to start talking more about this publicly. Not only will it be cathartic for me, this is him talking, but I also think there's so many lessons that can be learned and can be shared from what he has gone through. So I'm going to stop talking right now. We're going to dive right into it. For the first 25 minutes or so, we talk about the scary stuff, his story about what he's gone through. And then we transition into the lessons that he's learned along the way based on his online business and what he prioritizes in his life now and in his business, and just how he's basically reshaped his entire life. And I get into some personal stuff myself as well during this interview. So it's a little bit of a longer one, but I really think you're going to love it. I'd love to hear your feedback on this because, frankly, you know, I wasn't entirely sure about, you know, sharing this story because it's such a personal thing for Mel on the podcast here, but I think that it came out amazingly well and is super, super transparent. So without further ado, let's go hang out with Mel Abraham. So it was June 3rd. We're recording this right now on October 30th, end of October. So what? July, August, September, October. So 4 months later, almost to the day that when you first texted me to tell me something was going on, you noticed that something was up, you were feeling good. So you would never have known that something was up, but something was up and you needed to get it checked out. Absolutely. And, you know, I've known you for a while and I could tell that, you know, you were, I mean, rightfully so, pretty freaked out by it. So what was that like? What was that like the first, when you figured out something was going on and you're like, I got to get this checked out to see what's up?
So you know, one of the things for me was that I was rationalizing. So maybe I can, I mean, to be completely transparent and blunt is, you know, I started to see things in my urine and mm-hmm. I actually thought it was dehydration. I thought maybe, you know, back in 06, I had some kidney stones and I thought, you know, maybe it was that. So I was rationalizing it until I talked to Stephanie, my wife, and, you know, I showed her, you know, what it looked like. And she said, and I could just, in that moment, she did not want to say, she did not want to diagnose. She didn't want to, you know, but she's been in the medical field all her career for decades.
Yeah.
But I could see in her face when she said, we need to get you in to get checked out. And yeah. I'm going, what do you think it is? And she goes, I don't know. And she refused. She did not want to tell me, which she was concerned about what it would do to me. But I think just the look on her face and not wanting to tell me got me looking, got me freaking out and going, if she has that look on her face, then I need to take this seriously. And truth be told, I'm not sure I would have had I not seen that look and had she not been there. I might have rationalized it and it would have been a disaster.
Well, I mean, you said you felt great at the time. You're a very active person. You have multiple businesses going on. You work out all the time. You eat well. Like, I mean, why would you think something's up?
Well, and that's really it. I literally had just come back from a mastermind in Puerto Rico. I just spoke on two big stages. And in fact, when I started to see it more often was I was out of town at a speaking gig and that's when I started to talk about it. And I do, I try to take care of myself. Now I have a sweet tooth and all kinds of things and I'm active and I've been that way for pretty much most of my life. So there was no outward indication of any kind of pain or any kind of element of anything that was wrong. And when we dig down into everything that went on, the reality is I have none of the risk factors that you would say, oh, that guy's a candidate for this. And I think there's a lot of lessons in that really for us as we look at that.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit. What do you mean by that specifically? Because you're not, you know, I mean, what the person, the average age of somebody. So, well, actually, you know what, before we get to that, let's kind of get to that point.
Yeah.
So what was sort of the next step there? Because at this point you see the look in Stephanie's face. You're like, all right, you know what? I should probably get this checked out. You go get it checked out and what's going on at that point?
So the process for me was I had no idea who to go see. We found mm-hmm. someone, went in to see him. He immediately said, well, not sure what it could be. Let's put you in for a CT scan. So he wanted me to do a CT scan and a scope. We scheduled it all. I had the CT scan actually just before I texted you.
Yeah.
And then the scope was, I wasn't scheduled till June 13th, but so we did the CT scan and then I came back. I happened to travel to Chicago. Then I came back and then did the scope. And when I walked into that doctor's office, he immediately said, well, the CT scan showed a very large tumor in your bladder. And he says, I want to go on the scope to verify it. You know, so we did the scope on June 13th, and June 13th was the day that I got the diagnosis.
Yeah.
That I got the verification that I had a bladder tumor that was the size of a baseball. In fact, the CT scan showed it at smaller than it actually was when the surgeon went in. And the other thing that they told me in that meeting was that the size of it was shielding them from being able to tell whether my kidney was impacted, to tell whether my ureter, my access to the kidney was impacted. And it was sitting right at the opening on top of the prostate. So they weren't even sure if it was a tumor that was coming from the prostate into the bladder into the prostate or anything. So there was in that moment, so much up in the air. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I did realize is that this was not a normal case because of the size and the position of it. And I needed, and in fact, we walked out of that appointment and looked at Stephanie and we sat in the car and I said, I don't need a surgeon. I need an artist. This surgeon's going to hack me up. I need someone that artfully can go in and do this. And one of the challenges, you know, one of the challenges for me was that he got the CT scan 12 or 13 days before my appointment for the scope. He saw the size of the tumor and never called. And then all of a sudden, when I'm sitting in his office, he says, oh, this is an emergency. I need to get you into surgery right away. And he literally wanted me to schedule surgery that was a Thursday. He wanted me in surgery on Monday. So part of me, you know, kind of looked at it and said, wait a second, if it's now an emergency, why wasn't it an emergency when you saw the CT scan 12 days ago? And so at that point, you know, Steph and I literally did not leave the parking lot and said, we need to put a team together. There was plenty of dark moments beyond that, but we knew that I had to find someone else, someone that was an artist in this process. And that's when we started calling around and getting referrals. And we ended up with a surgeon at UCI that has been incredible and amazing.
You've probably heard the saying, if you want to make money, serve people. If you want to make a lot of money, serve lots of people. But how do you do that when you're already super short on hours in your day? So if you're on my email list already, then you know that I'm speaking at the Platform and Profit Summit. It's 100% free, and it's a 3-day virtual summit to help you better position yourself and your brand to create even more partnership and profits. Plus, in addition to discussing Facebook ads, I'll also be speaking on a panel called Positioning Yourself and Business for More Connections and Collaborations. Like, if you've ever wondered how I'm meeting all of these cool guests that are appearing on this podcast that you're just getting so much knowledge and info from, well, I'll be sharing that during that panel too. And it all starts May 1st. That's this Wednesday in a few days. Because, well, what if you could quit funding all of your events and projects and launches out of pocket and learn how to leverage the power of sponsorships? And I love this because I hate theory. I never did well with theory in school. I just like practical, actionable advice from people who are actually doing it right now, not what worked for them like 5 years ago. So like, what if you could generate consistent cash flow for your business or increase income while also reaching your lifestyle goals? You know, that reason that you started the business in the first place. Like, what if you could build credibility and influence while creating consistent partnerships and profit to grow your business? Me and about 30 other expert trainers, are going to share our strategies to help you create partnerships and profits, plus the mistakes that we've made so you can avoid them. And I can't stress this too much. This is what's working now, not last year, not the year before, but what we all are doing in our businesses now. So you ready to finally have more partnerships and profit in your online business? Use the link below to register for free. The Platform and Profit Virtual Summit. It's a 3-day free, 100% free summit, and it starts this Wednesday, May 1st. Learn how to better position yourself and create an even better partnerships so you can finally create the profits you desire in your business. I can't wait to see you there. Chat soon. All right, back to the episode.
I'll never forget, you know, that day that you texted me to let me know what was going on. And, you know, you and I talk about a lot of things, you know, business, life, health, all this stuff. And, you know, you don't know this, but when you texted me, I was at home. Amy was there and she could see the look on my face when I was reading your text, and she's like, what's going on? And I shared that with her. I broke down right there and, you know, just told her what was going on. And I read the text to her and stuff. And, you know, that was just, it just put things in perspective for me personally, like, you know, selfishly, it put things in perspective for me and, you know, wanting nothing more than like, all right, I obviously want you feeling better and fixed, for lack of a better way to say it. And that was just the start of the journey for you because we're in, at that point, you're in June. And you're having, so what's going through your head at this point? Because again, you normally go a million miles a minute. right?
I do.
Like I said, you have lots of businesses going on. You're speaking, you're consulting, you're coaching, you're, you know, you have an amazing family with your wife, and like you got a lot going on. All of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt, and it obviously it causes you to reprioritize things, and you're like, all right, we need to deal with this. And the uncertainty, I would imagine, only adds to what's going on in your head about it.
Huge. It did. And, you know, I often say now that, you know, it actually took a priority list and made it a priority bullet point, and that's it. I mean, there was one priority, and that was life.
Yeah.
I tried to control the decisions and the things that I could control, but there was so much uncertainty, because then that Friday we went in to see this other surgeon, and he says, no, we definitely have to go in. But he wanted to use special equipment. He wanted to use a special operating room that would give him a higher probability of getting everything, seeing everything, and doing everything. But that also meant waiting to get access to that room.
Yeah, you waited, what, like 3 weeks?
A month. Yeah, 3 weeks. It was because the first surgery was July 11th, so almost a month.
Hmm.
And that, not knowing, because here's what they told me. Well, if it's bad, I mean, I guess this is their way of giving you an idea of what it could be. If it's bad, in bad cases, you got to take out the bladder. Mm-hmm. I'm going, okay. Wait a second. What is life without a bladder?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that look like? And then he said, and I don't know the damage to the kidney, and we don't know if there's a prostate issue. So those are also risks. We might have to put a tube into the kidney, and we may have to put a bag outside. I mean, this is a guy who's literally, you know, active every day in the gym every day. And I'm sitting back all of a sudden saying, no bladder, tube and kidney, bag outside. And everything as far as my existence was put in question tremendously in that moment. And having the deep conversations with Stephanie and my son, Jeremy, to really start to understand, hey, this is real. And, you know, and hopefully it's not a big deal, but when shit gets real, you got to figure out who is real. And that's what ends up happening, is that I went through a lot of dark times. I didn't have a lot of time to go through it, but I had to think about things, what were important. And so one of the things I did is, when, you know, I've been, you know, 40 plus years in the martial arts and people getting ready to train competitively, what we do is we typically, you know, put a team together. You have your corner person, you have your person that helps you with stretching, with your balance, your footwork, your handwork, your movement, your strength, your nutrition. You have this whole team that's built up to put you in a ring to win a fight. And that's what I knew. And I said, okay, I have no choice. I'm going to be put in this ring to do this fight. I don't know what the fight is. I don't know if it's against like the world champion heavyweight and I'm a lightweight. I don't know. Yeah. But all I know is I'm going to approach it the same way. And once I stopped, you know, you go through the emotions of pity and anger and asking why, and much of it you never get answers for. And then I sat back and said, okay, I can distract myself with all of this, or I can decide to take this thing on. And so what we did is we searched out a team of doctors, from naturopathic oncologists to Qigong to meditation to the surgeons to an endocrinologist, a chiropractor, acupuncturist. I put a team together and said, I'm going to get in the ring and I got to do this fight. And all I'm asking you to do is to do what you do to get me as strong as possible to run this fight. And I didn't know, and I still don't know specifically, I didn't know what would work. And all I told Stephanie is, I don't know what's going to work, but we're going to hit it with everything. And all we care is that one thing works. That's how I started to approach this thing. I shut everything else down.
I was just going to say, you dropped everything else. You stopped everything to focus what this team that you put together was suggesting.
Absolutely. So I shut my businesses down. Not really shut. Let me do this. I removed my involvement from the businesses. Mm-hmm. I turned off the ads. I didn't want to put any pressure. I had a live event scheduled for September. I had no idea what was going to happen. And I was talking with you and another mutual friend, and we were having this conversation saying, Mel, you know enough people that we could pull this event off for you. But I didn't know what condition I would be in September. And then the question came up, said, we can get speakers in there. We can make sure that we have it done. We can run the whole thing. And at the end of the day, if we had that scheduled, would you still get stressed? And I said, yeah. And y'all said, then postpone it.
Yeah.
Because this is the time to focus on you.
Totally.
And so I drafted a letter to everyone that attended and that was supposed to attend and you know, and sent them and literally refunded all of their fees and said, hey man, I'll get this on the calendar. I'm going to beat this. But right now I need the space. And everyone was extremely, extremely gracious, but we literally cleared the whole table. And that's all I've done since that time till about a few weeks ago.
And yeah. And so I remember you telling me when they went in for the surgery that, correct me if I'm wrong, but things were a lot better than when they originally went in to check things out.
Initially in the surgery, he was really concerned because what he said, the surgeon went in and the moment he went in and touched the tumor, it started to bleed and it took him an hour just to stop the bleeding. And it turned out to be larger than what the CT scan said. Mm. And so it was a good 4.5-5 hour surgery. And he said it was the most difficult removal that he's ever done in his career. Mm-hmm. The challenge was, again, he didn't know, and they kept me in the hospital a few days because they didn't know if there was blockage in the kidney. They thought that so I came out of that surgery with the tumor removed. And then we had to wait for the pathology and we had to wait to determine whether the kidney was impacted. And so we didn't. So it took a week before he came back and said, there's nothing in this. So one of the challenges with bladder cancer is that if it embeds into the wall, that's when the bladder's at risk. And the good news was that it didn't affect the prostate. It didn't embed into the wall. And so he got it all. And now we had the opportunity to say, all right, so we took the beachhead and now we need to fight the rest of the battles to move forward. So that was much better than he had originally thought, because when a tumor is that vascular, it usually means that it's grown in and everything from what I understand.
Do you think that, obviously impossible to know, but your overall health improved during that time when you just eliminated everything that was going on, basically all the external stuff in your life and focused on your health and your mindset and all that stuff? I think I remember you telling me that on many different levels had a big effect on you.
Yeah, very much so. I listened to everyone that all the guidance and just did everything that they told me to do. I switched my diet. I had a big sugar fix and I used to use it as an excuse saying, look, I work out all the time. I can afford to eat the sugar. I've gone with no added sugar since that time. Actually, the first thing I did is I went on a water fast for 3 days. It's literally, I wanted to break the connection to sugar and literally only had water for 3 days.
Yeah.
But then changed the diet, got on new supplements. So everything was all focused on that, herbs and acupuncture. And the doctor, the surgeon said, he says, I know that this may not give you solace before the surgery, says, but if I've ever had a patient built for this fight, you're built for it.
Yeah.
And it did. It made a difference. It made a huge impact. I went through the surgeries. I ended up with 2 surgeries, both of them without any pain meds. And the recovery rate, they usually tell them to kind of lay off for 6 weeks. I was back in the gym a week later. And I've tried to keep going because I felt like, let me just keep this thing on the ropes. Let me keep this thing out. Let me keep moving forward and try to be an example of how to try and conquer this. I mean, I read things. It was the first time that I really started reaching out to people and asking for help, because I'm really horrible at asking for help.
I was just going to say, we've talked about that before, where you don't like to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? And you're always the first to help other people.
Yeah.
You know, we have been in a mastermind together for a few years and you're like the one that's always voted who's most helpful to everybody else, but yet you're so afraid to ask other people for help in your stuff. And, you know, this was a time, and this has been a time for you to, you know, I want to say get selfish. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. It's just like, you know what? It's time for people to do for you that you've been doing for others.
Yeah. It was a time for me to be okay with vulnerability. because this was so far out of my realm and so far out of control. And being the kind of control freak I am, this has been an immense lesson in trust and faith in things and people that I didn't really understand and didn't know.
Yeah.
And it really forces you to look at life and look at business and look at how we serve in a very, very different set of eyes.
So you're cancer free now?
Yeah. So the August 22nd was the second surgery. They found a small thing there, but the purpose of that was to go in, do a chemo wash and do a second pathology and now look at the kidney. And everything came back. I mean, when your surgeon calls you up and says, "I'm amazingly delighted," those are words that they don't use.
Yeah.
So we got it all. There's nothing in the wall. There is no cancer cells in there. We're in the midst of treatments, immunotherapy treatments to keep it away. I'm actually have a treatment tomorrow and my last one next week, and then we'll go in December and check again. But I am free. The little gremlin is gone. And that's why I started to get out more and start looking at things and say, okay, I took everything off my plate. What do I want to put back on my plate? I had a conversation. There was a doctor who was doing a study, and he said, imagine there's two petri dishes and both of them have cells in it. And one has toxins and one has nutrients. He said, over time, what you'll see is that the one with the cells and the nutrients will come together and combine. The one with the toxins will stay separate. And he said, the reality is that when your body is in distress, when your body is in disease, when your body is under stress, that your body cannot heal and it cannot grow. And he said, so what people normally do is they try to eliminate stress. And it's not the elimination of stress that's important. It is important, but he says it's actually, because what happens if we eliminate stress, and if we look at it on a spectrum, we go from high stress to no stress, he says that puts you at the zero point. That doesn't get you to grow. That doesn't get you to heal at the level that you could. He says what gets you to grow and heal is when you move past the zero point and make sure that you have joy in your life and love in your life and gratitude in your life. That's what starts bringing that healing. He says, so it's not about the elimination of stress. It's about the liberation from stress. And the way you do that, he says, it's not about stopping what you're doing, but making sure that what you're doing brings you joy. And I'm like, that was a huge thing. Now, as I'm reconstructing and re-looking at the things I'm doing in business and the things that I'm doing in my life and the things that I choose to do moving forward is to say, what do I want to put back on that plate? And there's some things that I absolutely do not want to put back on that plate because I want to make sure that I stay in that place. Not that there's not going to be hard times, but in that place where it brings me that visceral internal joy that we do. And I think that most of us, if we looked at our businesses and we start asking ourselves, are we doing the things that bring us joy? We probably going to find some things that we're scared to let go of, but we should because they're not.
Give an example of that, because you and I talked about this, what you're sharing right now, very specifically, because I struggle with anxiety and worry and unnecessary stress.
Yeah.
And it's something that has come to a head different times over the 6 years that I've had my business. And I mean, this year here in 2019 has been a year like unlike any other because I've become a dad. So it's a whole, you know, it's a whole new level of stress a little bit in a different way. But at the same time, it was a new stress that I hadn't ever obviously dealt with before.
Right.
And not only just trying to learn how to be a dad, but also running a business. And I now have, you know, another person to support with the business who, you know, I love, you know, more than anything.
Yeah.
And adding that stress. And I really felt like it was taking a toll on my health this year. I mean, it's certainly taken a toll on my health in so many different levels in past years during the business. But this year specifically, you know, I really felt like, you know what, if I didn't get this under control, like, God forbid, knock on wood, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then everything happened with you. And just it like I said before, it stirred up so much in me because of the types of thoughts that I'd been having, you know, on like on a selfish level, but yet you're the one that's going through all of this stuff. And, you know, I wanted obviously nothing but the best for you and to get this like solved, you know? And so talk more about that, because this whole reprioritization of your business and your life and what's important, you know, we feel like we have to do certain things in our business when in reality we really don't, right? So yeah. talk a little bit about that.
You know, I think there's two things that come to mind. The first is that you said, you know, specifics. Look, I have a business that one of my businesses that has been around for decades that is very lucrative from a financial standpoint, but it is absolutely a poverty level of joy. And that was a struggle for me about, do I give it up? Because I felt like so many people would love to have that career. And am I ungrateful, a little ungrateful bastard for saying you're taking this career and saying it doesn't mean anything to you. But I think that when we start to realize that I want to have an impact, I want to make a difference, I want to see people shine, I want to see their dreams fly, and that wasn't getting me there, that we need to make some hard choices and decisions. And what really kind of got to me is this realization of what currency do we trade in? We all have different currencies. And if you don't think that everything in your life is a transaction, you're mistaken. That transaction currency might be time. That transaction currency might be status. That transaction currency might be money. That transaction currency might be something else other than what we're used to, the swipe of a credit card or a dollar bill or a pound or lira, whatever it is. But the true currency, I think, that I've started to realize is that we've all been given a certain number of slices of life. And we get a choice to decide how we're going to spend those slices. This whole thing has got me to realize that those slices are finite. And that every time I say yes to something, whether it's in my business, whether it's a new opportunity, whether it's time with someone else, every time I say yes to something, what I am saying yes to is handing them a slice of my life that I can never get back. And I think that when we look at it in that way and ask ourselves, is this the transaction I want to make where I'm going to hand over a slice of my life, not get it back? What am I getting in return that makes sense? And what that has done for me is allowed me to be able to not have any guilt around saying no. And so now when I look at things, and we always look at our business, oh, I can't hire someone, or, you know, I got to delegate, and, you know, it'll cost hours. And yeah, and realize that if you're not hiring someone to do the things that don't bring you joy, then it's still costing you something. It just may not be in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
And if it's costing you your joy, if it's costing you slices of life that you're not ready to give up, that you're taking away from Maya or from your wife or your husband or the people you love, then we got to look at that cost and not think that there is no cost beyond the money that's going on. And I get it that some people might look at it and say, but I can't afford to hire someone. Well, then the beauty behind entrepreneurs, whether online or offline, is that unlike most people in life today that are wage earners, and my dad was a wage earner that is getting a paycheck from a company and all that, most of them come to life and say, I either have to find a side hustle or I have to adjust my expenses. The entrepreneurs are not that way. We get a chance to look at it and go, oh, I can affect both sides of the equation, the income side and the expense side. Often we focus on the expense side. How about we look at it and ask ourselves, how do I make this more joyful? How do I make this a way that I don't have to do it and make money at it? How do I pay for this so it allows me to get my slices of life back? And I think that that's how I'm starting to approach everything, that as I'm moving forward and looking at what life and my business in this next chapter is going to be like for this next 20, 30 years, because I intend to be here. It's really in that vein. It's how do we do things in a way that allows us to live our life to the fullest, live what I call an affluent life, not a wealthy life. Wealth to me is a statistic. What I want, and I think that most people aren't after the money, they're after the richness that life can provide them. And richness comes from feelings and experiences and not an account.
And that's really why I wanted to have this conversation with you on the podcast here. You know, we've talked about all this privately, but you know, that is really the lesson here that I frankly am taking so much of as well and reprioritizing, and I'm still a work in progress, but reprioritizing things and doing things, as you say, for the right reasons. What would you say to the person who's like, yeah, okay, Mel, it's kind of easy for you to say at this point because you've done so well in your business and you kind of get to pick your spots here and there. I'm in a position where I'm either miserable in my day job and I have this side hustle that I'm trying to build up because I want to leave my day job so that I can build up that side hustle to be full time, or the person who is doing, you know, they're doing their business full time and they're having trouble getting it going. So they maybe do have to focus on some of those things that don't super light them up.
So for me, and you're right. Look, I've had a blessed journey. I created my businesses in my life partly because I was a single full-time dad. I needed to create it to be able to take care of my son. Created it because I knew that what was more important to me than retirement was peace of mind and knowing that he was taken care of. I didn't create it for cancer. It just happened to work out that allowed me to deal with this cancer from a financial standpoint, to give me the alternatives, the options, and the ability to do the things that I was able to do. But that's where I think that we need to look at it, look at our worlds. And I think that it starts with getting really, really clear on what that looks like in our life and forgetting looking to the right and the left. In other words, forget what the Joneses are doing and forget what it might look like in your world to try it. Because it's really easy to compare someone's onstage presence to your backstage presence, and it's a mess.
What do you mean by that? That's because that is so, so true.
We get a chance to look at people that, you know, let's just look at you, Rick. I mean, I know you well. We've had some deep conversations and all that. And, you know, I mean, putting some things out there, but what the heck?
It's all good. This is about you, not me. No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
Bring it.
But I know that, you know, people from the outside can look at Rick Mulready and go, man, he's got it together. And this is an example of all of us, including me, that he's got it together. But deep down inside, or on the inside, in our backstage, sometimes things aren't working the way we want them and we're not operating as efficiently and we're stressed out or we're not feeling well or we're not enjoying what we're doing. There is this other world that the outside world doesn't see, but we seem to compare ourselves to what we see in the outside world.
Yep.
And we can look at all these people, whether it's a Brendan Burchard, whether it's a Rachel Hollis, whether it's an Amy Porterfield, whether it's a James Wedmore, all these folks in this business, or we can look at an Elon Musk, or, you know, we can look at all these people and go, oh, they're so lucky. Trust me, they got their blemishes also. And so rather than us try to compare where they're at, I think the first place is to start with us and say, what do I want? And forget the criticisms. If your joy is to live in a teepee in a field in Montana, you know, so you can fly fish, whatever, you know, that's your definition of success. It may not be mine, and my opinion of your success shouldn't matter. So I think that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second is to create a plan, not just a vision, but an actual plan where you're literally say, all right, here's the steps. Whether you're in a job and trying to do it as a side hustle, or whether you're in the business and trying to build it, is to create a plan that is an execution plan, not a vision plan only. So in other words, we're going to break it down to projects, and we want to break it down to action steps, and we want to break it down to those things that will move the needle and run that plan in 90-day increments so we can continue to adjust. And then the third thing I think is to be uber, uber, uber focused. As an entrepreneur, we have what I call sandbox syndrome. And what I mean by that is that, have you ever seen the kid in the sandbox that is collecting all the toys, and they may not play with all the toys, but they want all the toys? Mm. And so opportunities come our way, and it's a really good opportunity. And rather than letting it go because it's not the right opportunity for you, or it's not the right opportunity for you at that time or something, you try to collect it. And then we end up collecting these opportunities that we don't do good with. And they actually aren't, they're going to distract us and not keep us on track and on that focus. So I think that if we combine the clarity with an execution plan and a uber focus to say, no, this is it. If it is not on the plan, we don't do it, no matter how good it is, because that's when we start to get in trouble. And I think that's where we start to get things rolling. It's like this momentum effect that it's going to feel tough at the beginning and everything, but we start to see that our journey will start to pay off. But I think that without a plan, an execution plan, without the focus and without clarity, none of it is going to come into play.
And clearly, I want to reiterate what you said there, really clearly defining what success means to you.
Yes.
And not running somebody else's race.
Yeah.
Because when we look at what somebody else is doing and you're like, oh, I want that. Everything looks amazing in that person's world from afar or from the Instagram feed or what have you. That's not always reality.
It is. Look, you thought for a while, about a year or so ago, you wanted to build a big team.
Yep. And I wanted an office that people came into.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And frankly, that was something that other people that I knew were doing, and it sounded really good and, you know, like, cool, let's do it. Then my daughter was born and, you know, whole new shift in perspective and priorities for me, where I'm like, I don't want that. You know, like, I want to build, you know, a multi-million dollar business in as lean a way as possible and not have an in-person office for people. And if that's what you want, meaning anybody listening, guys, like, awesome, right? But be clear on why.
Clear and intentional.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and as far as the big team, I didn't want that anymore. I want, you know, a small team of, you know, I hate the cliche, like, A players, but yeah. Like, that's really what I want. And that's what I'm building, and gone through different iterations of, I mean, office and team and stuff. And I feel like where I'm finally more so on that right for me, an intentional path for what I want to be building and the impact that I want to have in the business.
And that in and of itself, if we avoid the comparisons, I think we'll relieve you, because I know for me, that's where this whole thing allowed me to just kind of look at things and say, no, I'm going to do it my way, which I kind of have always done in my life, but I've allowed what other people are doing or what other people expect of me to affect my decisions. And I think that, I'm looking at this whole thing and saying, all right, I have whatever time I have left here, and may it be decades, that I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. I'm going to serve the people that I want to serve in the biggest way possible. I want to share my life with the people that I love and my beautiful bride. And the rest of it doesn't matter. I don't have the desire. I had an office with 30-some employees at one point in time. I think the challenge comes in when we start to allow what the external look is to be the validation or affirmation of what our internal feelings are, is where the problem is. And so I'd look at it and say, what kind of business do you want to be in? How does that business look? How do you want to serve? How does it affect your life? And know that lifestyle is in every single business equation. It doesn't get talked about, but every single business equation has lifestyle as part of the formula. And so if you're a new dad, when I was a single full-time dad, I had to really seriously think, how do I balance this and make sure that I do the right thing for Jeremy? Because trust me, I didn't at the beginning until he drew a picture and it hit me smack dab in the face to go.
Tell that story.
Yeah. So I became a full-time single dad of Jeremy when he was 5.5 years old, and about 6 years old. You know, at the same time, I got pushed out by my partners. So I had no clients, no cash flow, no work backlog. So I was starting ground zero. And I was 300 plus in debt because I just bought a house. And I'm sitting there going, all right, how do I do this? So I did what most entrepreneurs do. And that was to dig my heels in, put my head down and do the work. And I started doing the work. So I started getting clients. I started getting cash flow. I had client backlog. I had things working and it started feeling really good. And I got this thing in it and now we're growing. And then Jeremy came running in from school one day. He came running in. He says, Daddy. He says, I drew a picture of you at school today. And he's like this excitement in his voice was this kid on his birthday morning looking at presents and all that stuff. And so I knelt down. I grabbed a hold of this picture and it was in blue felt tip pen. There I was standing in front of two computer screens with a phone in each ear and the one on the desk ringing. And I realized that I was totally botching, so I was totally screwing it up. That in that moment, a six-year-old boy gave me the greatest business lesson that I could have ever asked for. I mean, I didn't know how to deal with it at the time because the first tendency is to go, hey, kid, this is for us. And to rationalize and say, hey, you know, the profits are going to allow us to, so we can do these things and do this. But I realized that he didn't want my profits. He wanted my presence. He wanted me there. And so that's when I started to understand this whole concept of work-life balance being a myth. It's a fallacy to sit back and go, oh, well, you need balance in your life. We don't need balance in our life. We need harmony in our life.
Yeah.
There's a way to integrate your life and your business to do it in a way that you take care of things. Look, I have watched over my wealth for many, many years. I check it because I'm a freaking accountant. So I got to look at the numbers. But you know what happened? I moved about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, south, about 120, 130 miles. I left my doctors behind. And so I was healthy. I was working out. So I didn't have a physical or any kind of checkup for the last 7.5, 8 years. So I took the fingers off, as much as I kept the fingers on the wealth pulse and some of my relationship pulse, I took them off of my health pulse. And it wasn't until I got the cancer to realize, wait a second, because I don't know, it probably wouldn't have stopped it. But had I gotten checkups, had I gotten to a point where before it was visible to me, then we probably wouldn't have been in such a precarious position. It wouldn't have grown to the size it was. But I took my fingers off the pulse. And so I look at things and say, how many of us are taking the fingers off the pulse of our relationships, of our health or our wealth or one of those, you know, our spirituality, our emotional well-being, our leadership skills. And it sounds like a lot, but if you truly want to show up, we can't just be great in one aspect because then we end up like I ended up. I feel like I've been given a gift that this didn't penetrate the wall. It didn't spread. And it's allowed me to sit back and say, let's make sure that isn't about balance, that we get harmony in our life to do things in a way that there is harmony, that we do things that feed each other and we do it consciously, we do it with intent and intentionally, and we don't just go along for the ride.
Sitting here listening to you, like I'm getting emotional because I'm thinking about myself and how, frankly,
don't you get emotional because then I'm gonna lose it.
We already said before we even did this that this could happen. Like, you know, I think about my life as it has been and as it is right now. And I'm like, as you're talking about, I'm nodding my head, like thinking to myself, Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I rationalize that I'm working so much because this is for, you know, Amy and Maya. And I've gotten much better. Like I was just talking to Amy last night about it and I have gotten much better, but there's so much more I still want to do. And, you know, I lost my dad to, I don't think you and I've talked to this extent about it, but I lost my dad to colon cancer when he was 55 and he was, so
I'm not
I was
much 20, older than that.
Yeah. And I was 25 when he passed, and my dad was the closest person to me in my life. And he was diagnosed at 45. And so it was a 10-year real struggle with the treatments and surgeries and all that stuff. And my dad was an auto mechanic and he worked at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard as a what do you call it when you're not military? Well,
non-civilian.
Civilian, thank you. A civilian at the shipyard in Kittery, Maine. And, you know, there were all kinds of issues going on from a government perspective and during that time. And my dad was always stressed, always about, you know, and, you know, I grew up in a very, you know, in a blue collar, and my mom was a nurse when I was a kid, and then she transitioned over to being a children's librarian, and my dad was an auto mechanic. You know, so, you know, it was the whole money doesn't grow on trees. We can't afford that. And so, I mean, that's a whole other story. But at the same time, it was work hard if you want anything. And I literally saw my dad deteriorating as his life went on because he was working so hard, because it was such a physically demanding type of work that he was doing as a mechanic, where he's underneath these big trucks all day and in the, and you know, all this other stuff. And I'll never forget that one day he came in the house after he was coming home from work, and he was hunched over and he was just in so much pain from just the work that he was doing. And that's always stuck in my mind about what work was doing to him. And then ultimately, I firmly believe that this is something that I later on in my life figured out, that the stress that he had from his job, because at the time the government was going through, you know, shutdowns of Navy yards and Air Force bases and all this other stuff. And the Naval Shipyard, it's still open all these years later, but that was on the list. And that it was rumored for years and years that it was going to close. And here my dad was thinking, here I am at, you know, 52 years old, I'm going to lose my job. And I'm an auto mechanic. And, you know, in his words, it was like, you know, it's a young kid's game now, where it's all electronics and computers and stuff. And he wasn't trained on that. So that really wore on him. And I firmly believe that the stress of his job shortened his life, that he unfortunately died sooner than he needed to because he let that stress overtake him, essentially. And, you know, I don't mean that in a sense of my dad gave up. I just mean that it affected him internally. And so I have equated in my life since then, especially since I've run my own business for the past 6 years, that like that is that it's kind of weird because I've realized it, but yet it hasn't fully driven me to change 100% yet, if that makes sense. I saw what it did to him. I saw that the stress of what a job or, you know, your career or whatever it is can do to you. It literally, I think, took his life sooner than it needs to. But I've become aware of this, but it's like, I know I saw that firsthand, but yet it hasn't fully, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. It hasn't fully made me change my ways yet, if that makes sense.
Well, and I get that. Knowing you though, I'd argue that you're changing things more so than you think. And just based on our conversations, that here's where I think that this plays out is that, and we're going to, this to me is financial, because if we're financially secure, then we have options. I had the ability to say, oh, that doctor's not covered by insurance. I don't care. He's the best. We're going to him.
Yep.
We've got probably $250,000 in bills, you know. Granted, we have medical insurance, so we're not paying for all of it. But I wasn't corralled in a situation where I said, well, I got to just take what you give me.
Yeah.
And what I mean by this is that we've been sold a bill of goods in America and abroad. You know, this just save, and it, you know, and then spend. It's this save and pray mentality. It's a broken retirement program. It's a broken financial system. When you are... I was listening to something this morning. This person is $400,000 in student loan debt for a job that's going to pay them $80,000. You do the math on it. It just doesn't make sense. And it's because we're not doing things the right way. And I think what we really need to look at, and this is where I'm getting at with you, is I know because we've had these conversations, what you're building and how you're trying to build it. And there may be this period of time in your business, and it may not be just you, it may be the listeners too, in your business where you're really investing the time to build something. But what you're building is a machine that at some point, and this is what saved my butt, is you're building a machine that will allow you to live off of the crops of that machine, the cash flow from the machine, without your efforts. And it's not, it's something that we don't talk about. It's something because it's not easy to do, but it's the right thing to do. If I could turn around today and say, I don't have to work, we just turn the machine on, and it takes care of me, and it takes care of my wife, and it takes care of my son, and it changes the family tree. That took a while to build. But yeah, every single person, whether you're a wage earner or an entrepreneur, entrepreneurs have a better chance at it, and have more alternatives. You can do this. I mean, millionaires are built based on not your ability to build wealth and to build that peace of mind has less to do with money and more to do with behavior. Yeah. It's 80% behavior. And I think that over time, so couple that with something that after that picture was drawn by Jeremy, one of the things that I did is I used a calendar, and I had red blocks on the calendar that Jeremy always knew those were his times. Hmm. Not movable, not changeable, yeah, nothing. And so when we are stuck where we got to try and find that harmony, we need to give the gift of our slice of life and our time to those that we love and make sure that those are not movable. So they're not, so our boundaries aren't so soft. Well, I'm going to work late today. Honey, I'm going to be home late for dinner. Go ahead and have dinner with me. That, to me, starts to erode the relationships. It starts to erode. Now, things happen. I get it. You're in the middle of a launch. You got to handle stuff, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But if that is the normal way, then we got an issue. I had lunch years ago with Bill Marriott at the Times Square Marriott Marquis. So we're sitting at lunch, and I asked Bill, I said, you know, one of the things that he talked about is the person at that time that was the general manager of the Marriott Marquis in Times Square started in the linen closet. And he says, we are a family values organization. And he says, I make sure, unless I have planned travel, that I'm home with my wife every night for dinner. And that's where we start to create that harmony, and we communicate, we over-communicate, and we create those boundaries so they feel supported, they feel served, they can support and serve back. And over time, we build it, but we build it with the eye towards creating peace of mind. We build it with the eye of not accumulating stuff, but to create something that allows us to live fully and on our own and our own rules. That's how I did it as a single dad. And then when my wife came into the picture 8.5 years ago, we said, we want to create experiences with each other. And then when this happened, we kind of re-looked at things and said, all right, how do we want to go from here? And I think that's really the key.
Creating your business around your lifestyle defined on your own definition of success.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this with my listeners, with me. I've learned so much. You know, I'm all emotional as you talk and as I think about you and what you've gone through and what, you know, I told you at the retreat. You spoke at the Accelerator Retreat last week that you're a mentor to me on so many different levels, and I learn so much from you. And, you know, like I've been talking about, thinking about how for me and what my life looks like and what I'm doing and building and all that stuff. So I just want to acknowledge you for, you know, you haven't shared this story publicly like this before.
This and is back at the retreat. You kind of said, hey,
yeah. So quick, you know, and I know I talked about this in the intro, but basically Mel was coming to speak at the retreat about frameworks and developing frameworks for your business, one of the many topics that he's an expert on. And like 5 minutes before that he was supposed to start his presentation, he's got slides on the TV and all this amazing stuff. I said, hey, would you be willing to share a little bit about what you've been going through and sort of the reprioritization of your priorities in your life and your business? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. I'm an open book. And as you talked, I watched all of the members of the mastermind watch you. And they were literally on the edge of their seats. They had moved up on the edge of their seats, and they were just so engrossed with what you were talking about that, you know, and I know, like I said, I know the effect that our conversations have had on me. I'm like, man, like, I'm just going to throw this out there. Would you be willing to talk to this on the podcast? And, you know, I hope you don't mind me sharing. You said, you know what? I'm an open book. And I think it is time for me to start talking about this and sharing the lessons that I've learned, and that it would be, you know, that it could be cathartic for you and help you in this healing process. So thank you for sharing all this. And, you know, you started to touch on it there as far as the finances and the entrepreneurial priorities from, or the ways to look at your finances and what you're building from a financial perspective. That's going to be a whole other episode. And, you know, yeah. I'm going to have you and I have been talking about this. We're going to have you back on to talk about that, because when you start sharing that stuff, you know, the listeners that, you know, are figuring out what to do with their finances and what they're building from a financial perspective and what you started to touch on today, we're going to dive into all that really deeply coming up here soon on the show. So any parting words, any final thing that you want to kind of put a, and you really did at the end, I'm just kind of putting you back on the spot here to tie up this episode.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. First, thank you for taking the time to say, hey, I'm going to approach you and everything. And for me, I haven't talked about it. I didn't do it on social, and it was more because I didn't want the pity. But I think that there's a lot of lessons. I am an open book. I'm completely transparent. I can get gross about what it took to get through it. I can get real about it. But I think the more we have these types of conversations about our life, about our business, about our money, about our relationships, the better off we'll be. And I think it's easy to shove things under the rug, to delay things, to stall things out, to rationalize things, as I did too. But the reality will always rise to the surface at some point in time. And sometimes it's a subtle hint, and sometimes it's a real big blow like this was, that got me to say, okay, maybe I didn't pay attention to the other hints. This one's a big one. I'm going to pay attention to it. And I think that all we did was take a half an hour, an hour, sometime this week or this weekend, and just look at your life and say, check in with it. You know, check in. Am I doing the right things? Am I in harmony? Is this what I want to do? How can I do it better? How can my relationship be better? How my relationship with myself, my health, my wealth? I think that when we decide to rid ourselves of the burdens of the Facebook and Instagram images of their perfect lives, and we decide that we're going to define our success on our terms, and we're going to live to our world and what we want to see, we're going to be far better for it. And we're going to be far more relaxed, because I'm not keeping up with the Joneses. I'm not trying to get the big car, the big house, just because someone else got it. If I'm going to get it, it's because I'm doing it responsibly, and it's what I want to do. And I think that we live intentionally. We build our business intentionally. We have an impact intentionally. We serve intentionally. And we do that, I think things will be a whole lot more harmonious and better.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to make sure that people can connect with you.
Yeah.
If they like to, what are some of the ways that they can do that?
So I'm on the Instagrams at MelAbraham9. I guess it took 8 times to get it right. So MelAbraham9 on Instagram. My website's melabraham.com. I also have a Facebook business page and a group called Influencers Dojo. Like I said, I'm an open book. I'm getting back in the game. You're going to see more stuff, because I think that people need to rethink how we're living our lives financially, entrepreneur-wise, business-wise, so we can be fulfilled and have peace.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll link all those links up for Mel on the show notes page. So Mel, my man, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, my brother. Thank you.
Hey, I want to thank you for tuning in today and listening to this interview with Mel. How awesome is Mel Abraham? If you think that somebody that you know could benefit from listening to this conversation, please share this episode and the podcast with them if they could get some benefit out of this. Also, I do want to give you a heads up that I am now taking applications for my Accelerator Mastermind. Okay. RickMulready.com/accelerator. Accelerator, you can fill out the application right there. And if you are a fit, we'll schedule a free breakthrough call with me, yours truly, and to see if you are a fit. Now, this program is a 6-month program, and it is for online experts. In other words, you're a course creator, you're a coach, you're a consultant, you're an online educator, and you're looking to take your business to the next level. And then that next level could be to break through 6 figures. If you're already doing, say, like 4 to 5,000 a month in revenue in your business, now you want to break through 6 figures. Maybe you want to get to multiple 6 figures or even 7 figures. Then the Accelerator Mastermind is for you. This is all about coaching, accountability, support, and community. And I'd love for you to apply if you're listening to this right now thinking, yeah, I'm stuck in my business and I do need outside eyes on my business. We all have blind spots in our business, and this mastermind and coaching program is designed to do just that for you. Give you those external eyes, if you will, and show you those blind spots and allow you to break through to the next level of your business. So again, if you'd like to apply, go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. Okay. Coming up on the podcast, I've got another quick tip episode coming your way. Thank you again so much for listening to the podcast, and I'll see you right back here for the next episode of the Art of Online Business podcast.
Don't forget to head down to the show notes below and register for the Platform and Profit Summit that starts May 1st, this Wednesday, where you're going to hear just practical advice that's working right now, this year in 2024, not in years past, right? Like how to build a 90-day evergreen funnel that actually works. Presented by Corinne Crabtree. Heard of her? How about minimalist marketing? How to get more eyes on your business by doing less? Or what about 5 simple website fixes to get more clients? I'm not going to read through all of these good talks and strategy sessions, but what you got to take away is this is not theory. It's what's working in people's business. These experts that are speaking, they're sharing the good stuff, behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, I'll be speaking there too on a panel about how to position yourself and your business for more connections and collaborations, because really it's partnering and collaborating with people that brings authority, that brings in steady revenue and profit into my business. So I want you guys to learn and take away strategies and tips and tricks and real systems that you can put to work in your business right now. That link is in the show notes below. Sign up is 100% free, but it does start May 1st. That's in a couple days from now, and I'll see you there. Take care. Bye.